I think that it's best that we look at the scripture to see that. And you know, one thing I like to make the word practical. You know, I feel that if somebody comes around and they're always talking about holiness and they're talking about I need to be holy and they don't tell me how to be holy, then you really haven't helped me. Or what you've done is you've just frustrated me a little bit more. You know, sometimes I like to listen to good preaching on the radio. But you know, sometimes I turn it off. You know why? Because, man, MacArthur came at me with this. Jeremiah came at me with that. Stanley came with that. Swindoll came with that. And I'm like, wow, it's too much. Too much. I can't get a hold of it.
Welcome to Anchored in Jesus, the teaching ministry of Dr. William R. Glaze, founder of the Pittsburgh Institute of Biblical Studies, author, and senior pastor of Bethany Baptist Church. This is Sonia Hall, thanking you for joining us today for the conclusion of Resolutions to a Holy Life from Psalm 101. So let's join Dr. Glaze for the conclusion of Resolutions to a Holy Life from Psalm 101.
Yeah, you can't be going around listening to just anything. And I had to let it go. I had to let it go because God said that, you know, this is not the way that a child of God should act. This is not the way that a child of God, this is not the type of thing a child of God needs to be listening to. And you know what? David realized that. And David said, you know what? He said that I want my life to come in accordance with the will of God so that in everything that I do, that I'll be pleasing to him. I will behave myself wisely in a perfect way. In the notes you see it says, sow a thought, reap an act. Sow an act, reap a habit. Sow a habit, reap a character. Sow a character, reap a destiny. And people's destinies are shaped and formed by thoughts that turn into acts, that turn into habits, that turn into characters, that turn into destiny. And you might think that something that you're doing is so innocent, is so insignificant, but if it's something that's interfering with the holiness, it's blocking the holiness in your life, David said, I'm going to behave myself wisely, that there are some things that I have to let go. And you know what? When you get a glimpse of who God is, you know, things that you used to do, you can't do anymore. And you know, I don't want anybody to think, because some young people think that, oh man, this Christian life is so boring. It's just, you know, a bunch of do's and don'ts, and here go Pastor Glaze. See, some people want to shut me down already because here he go talking about holiness. Here he go again. I don't even want to hear this. He talking nonsense to me. But I tell you what, man, I've had so much enjoyment out of life since I became a child of God. I'm just going to be honest with you. I mean, man, I enjoy my life. If I was to die today, I would at least go into heaven and say, Lord, you know what? I've had a lot of joy since I've become a Christian. Oh, I can't say that the road has been easy. I can't say that the times have not been tough. But you know what? I've had joy in my life, and that when I lay my head down at night, I got peace in my soul and I got joy in my heart, and everything between me and God is all right. And I've been out there. And a lot of y'all, as I said earlier, y'all been out there. And you know where it leads to. Three things: death, dirt, and destruction. Those are the three things. And some people just are caught up for the moment. They're caught up for the moment, and that's all they can see. But they don't look at the end result. And the end result is destruction. David realized that my character, my destiny is being shaped right here on the behavior of my life. That the little choices that I make in my life actually is shaping my character and my destiny. And I'm not going to make those soft, easy choices that's going to cause me to end up with a destiny that I don't want. Resolution to be holy in conduct. Resolution number two, to be holy in cohabitation. Now, I put that there. Let me clean that up. All right, let me clean it up. I looked it up in a dictionary. Cohabitate means to live together as a family, all right? So we're talking about a legal family. All right, and then plus we're talking about being holy, so you can't cohabitate you know, and not be married and be holy too. That's an oxymoron. All right, so let me clean that up. But look what he said in verse 2. He says at the end, he said, I will walk within my house with a perfect heart. You know, David realized that the hardest place to walk holy was in the home. He realized that the true test of your holiness is with those people who live with you. And if you really want to know how holy Pastor Glaze is, you don't have to go far. There's about four or five people that you can ask. You know, you can ask them real quick and they'll tell you, you know, how holy is Pastor Glaze? And you'll find out that I'm pretty holy. No, just kidding. But we need to realize that holiness is not only a part of our character, but it's a part of who we are in our home. That if we do things in our home that are inconsistent with our life in public, there's people that see that. And you know what they say? I mean, they might not come confront you boldly with it, but believe me, it's in their heart, man. Look at that hypocrite. Look at that. You know, how in the world are you going to get out here and talk about loving Jesus and stand up in church and raise your hands and send up prayer requests and all this and that? And you're one of the biggest devils in the home that I know. See, you know, this thing has got to work in the home too. It's got to be manifested in the home. Oh, I like what Charles Spurgeon says. He says, do you sing in the choir and sin in the chamber? Are you a saint abroad and a devil at home? What we are at home, we are indeed. You know, I tell my wife, you know, one reason I like being home, last night I had to be Reverend Glaze. I go to meetings, I got to be Dr. Glaze. I come here, I'm Pastor Glaze. Some folk call me, I'm Coach Glaze. When I go home, I'm no Glaze. You know, I mean, I just chill, you know, just chill. You know, it's no titles in front of the name at home. You know, your kids, they don't necessarily care that you got a doctorate degree or you've been licensed or ordained. They won't know if you got $5 when they get. You can have all the D's before, you can have so many degrees in front of your name, they call you Dr. Fahrenheit. But if you don't have $5 when they need it, then you ain't. So, you know, I like being at home because, you know, that's when I can relax and I can unwind. I can let down. But you know what? I can't become so loose that I let my Christianity go. I can't become so loose that now, you know, you just done got raw. No, you can't do that. You got to realize that this holiness works in your home too. Oh, I love this poem that I heard. It says, if Jesus came to your home to spend a day or two, if he came unexpectedly, I wonder what you do. I know you give him the nicest room to such an honored guest, and all the food you serve him would be the very best. And you would keep assuring him that you're glad to have him there, that serving him in your home is a joy beyond compare. Out when you saw him standing there, could you have gone to the door with outstretched arms to welcome him as your heavenly visitor? Or would you have to change some things before you let him in, or hide the magazines and put the Bible where it'd been? Would your family conversation be continued at its pace? And would you find it hard each meal to say a table grace? Would you be glad to have him meet your very closest friends, or would you hope they stay away until his visit ends? Would you be glad to have him stay forever on and on, or would you sigh with a great relief when at last he was gone? It might cause some embarrassment, the things that you would do if Jesus came to your house to spend some time with you. What would you have to change if Jesus came to your house? The pastor came to visit one dad. And the pastor came in, and the dad said to his son, "Son, go get the blessed book that we read every day." And the son went and got a Playboy magazine. See, what is it? What is it that you would have to change if Jesus came to your house? See, David realized that what he was at home, that he was indeed. Resolution number three, to be holy in contemplation. To be holy in contemplation. Look what he says in verse 3. "I will set no wicked thing before my eyes." David realized that he got in trouble by looking at things he shouldn't have been looking at. Perfect example, one day when kings went out to war, and David got up late in the afternoon, and he walked on his porch, and he saw a lady taking a bath. He looked a little bit longer than he should have. And the next thing you know, he was in bed with her. The next thing you know, she was pregnant. The next thing you know, her husband was dead. Why? Because David looked at something that he shouldn't have looked at. David said that, "I will set no wicked thing before my eyes. I will not contemplate. I will not allow those things that draw my attention away from God, that cause me to have impure, improper thoughts. I will put them away from me." You know, the writer of Hebrews said the pleasure of sin lasts only for a season. You know, that enjoyment, whatever that wicked thing is that you meditate on, whatever that wicked thing is that you look at, it only lasts for a season. Would to God, at least if you're going to sin, that there would be some ongoing thrill, emotion, enjoyment that would just, you do it, you do that sin one time and the thrill would last forever. But it's like B.B. King said, when you sin, after it's over, the thrill is gone, baby. It's gone. It's gone. And David realized that. David realized that sin lasts only for a moment, that the pleasure, that the emotion, that the thrill lasts only for a moment. And he said, because of that, I'm not going to set wicked things before my eyes to meditate on and to dwell on, because it's not worth it. It's not worth it. In the notes it says, keep out of your life all that will keep Christ out of your mind. My. Keep all out of your life that will keep Christ out of your mind. As a matter of fact, look what David said he was going to focus at. Look at verse 6. He says, my eyes shall be upon the faithful of the land. He said, those are the ones that I'm going to look at. You know, those are the ones that I want to emulate. Those are the ones that I want to follow. I want to look at the pulpit ministers at Bethany Baptist Church. I want to look at the deacons of Bethany Baptist Church. I want to look at the deaconesses of Bethany Baptist Church. I want to look at those leaders that have their lives lined up where God wants them to be. David said, my eyes will be on the faithful of the land. And you know, that's probably why, you know, a lot of the young people are in the situation that they're in today, is because we haven't been good role models. I don't know how many young folk that I've seen that used to go to somebody's church and don't go to, excuse my English, nobody's church. And one of the reasons that they don't go is because of what they saw adults doing. Would to God that we would check ourselves. Would to God. Now, once again, you can't let young folk come in and run stuff. All right? You can't let them come in and run stuff. But, man, the church has to be more sensitive and work better at being a witness and an example. If they see us fussing and fighting and arguing, you know, why do they want to be a part of that? That's what's happening out in the world. They can go out there and do what they feel is fun and fuss and fight. Man, would to God that we would be good examples and that we would be the faithful. Like David said, my eyes shall be on the faithful of the land. You know what? Let it be that if one of us should fall, that the heart of a young person would break. I'm gonna tell you what. My heart broke when Jimmy Swaggart fell. My heart broke. I used to watch that man every time he came on. And I used to love to listen to him preach. And you know what? Even when I became a preacher, one of the things that I asked myself when temptation came my way and when the opportunity came my way, you know, one of the things I would ask myself, and this might be wrong, because I know we should say, what would Jesus do? But there was a couple times that came to my mind, would Jimmy Swaggart do this? But you know what? I see something good in that. I know that Jesus is the role model. I know that Jesus is the role model. But when we can look at somebody and we have a respect for their life, and we can look at them and there's some things in their life that we see God working and we see them honoring God in their life, that there should be something that we can look at and say, because we're looking at the world and saying, there goes my role model. That Peyton Manning is my role model. That Michael Jordan is my role model. That Sammy Sosa is my role model. Would to God that we could look at the household of faith and say that deaconess, trustee, choir member, Christian, so-and-so has been a good role model for me. And that if they fail, instead of young people looking and saying, look, nothing but old hypocrite anyway, that their hearts would break. That their hearts would break if somebody failed. But the thing, a lot of times, we don't give them that chance for us to be their role model because we got so much garbage and junk that we're dealing with. And we got to let some of that junk, we got to deal with that before God, and we got to get the victory over it because there's too much at stake here. There's too much. You know, I would hate to have to stand before the Lord and say that some young person, and once again, they got to deal with God. You know what? They got to deal with God on their own. If they walked away from the faith, they got to deal with God. But wouldn't it be a shame for them to look back and say, well, so-and-so did such and such a thing, and that just messed up my idea of Christianity. That messed up my idea of the faith. Wow. David said, my eyes will be on the faithful of the land. I'm not going to put wicked things before my eyes, but I'm going to put my eyes on the faithful of the land. And my fourth point, resolution, to be holy in community. You know, not only holy, you know, in my personal conduct, holy in my home, holy in the things that I meditate on, but when I get out into a greater community, I want to have the testimony that I have a holy life. The greatest miracle, as Leonard Ravenhill said in your notes, the greatest miracle that God can do today is to take an unholy man out of an unholy world, to make that man holy, and put him back into an unholy world and keep him holy in it. My, my, my. My, my, my. Resolution to be holy in community. Look at David. Said in verse 3, he said he would shake off the outward influences of the world. He said, I will set no wicked thing before my eyes. I hate the work of those who turn aside. It shall not cling to me. It shall not cling to me. That the world, you know, I was doing some work outside one day and I was sawing. And as I was sawing, the shavings from the wood fell on the ground. And a caterpillar started crawling across the ground and crawled through the sawdust. And when it got on the other side, it had sawdust all over it. You know, sometimes when we walk through this world, it's easy to pick up the sawdust of the world. It's easy to pick up the thoughts, the ideology, the attitudes, the methods of the world. David said, I realize there's a possibility that might happen. But what did he say? He said, I'm going to shake it off. He said, it's not going to cling to me. He said that evil, he said that the work of those who turn aside, the work of those who do evil, it's not going to cling to me. And not only that, but he said that he would root out the inward influences. He said, not only the outward influences, but he said, if somehow the world has creeped into my heart, he said, I'm going to root it out. Look what he said in verse 4. A perverse heart shall depart from me. He said, I'm going to get my shovel. If my heart is wicked, he said, I'm going to get my shovel. I'm going to dig and I'm going to root it out. A perverse heart. I'm going to root out. I like what Jonathan Edwards said. If you'll turn your notes over. Number 52. Once again, he has 70 of these. A 20-year-old young man. He said, I frequently hear persons in old age say how they would live if they were to live their lives over again. Resolved that I will live just so as I can think I wish I had done, supposing I lived to an old age. He said, I don't want to be one of these people who say, I wish I'd have did this or I wish I'd have did that. He said, I want to do what I know is right to do. 60, resolve. Whenever my feelings begin to appear in the least out of order, when I am conscious of the least uneasiness within or the least irregularity without, I will then subject myself to the strictest examination. I'm going to root it out. If something begins to creep in my heart, I'm going to root it out. 67, resolve after affliction to inquire, what am I better for them? What good have I gotten by them and what I might have gotten by them? Root it out. You know, I'm going to examine my heart that to see if the world has creeped into my heart. If there's anything of the world that has creeped into my heart, I'm going to root it out. You know, we have to look at our lives on a daily basis. We have to do a daily examination. And then finally, David said that he would not, or that he would avoid the bad company of the world. He said that he would avoid the bad company of the world. Look at verse 5. Whosoever secretly slanders his neighbor, him will I cut off. And him that hath a high look and proud heart, I will not tolerate. He said, look, I'm not going to find my fellowship with people that slander and talk about other folk. He said, I'm not going to find my fellowship with people who are proud and arrogant. Look at verse 7. He said, he that worketh deceit shall not dwell within my house. And he that telleth lies shall not tarry in my sight. David said, I'm not going to work with folk that deceive other people, and I'm not going to work with liars. He said, fellowship with them. He said, I might have to be around them, I might have to deal with them, but I'm not going to find my source of fellowship with people who are known desperados in sin. See, you can't walk with God and run with the devil. I heard a preacher say yesterday, you can't be on God's honor roll and on Satan's payroll. It don't work. You can't do that. And so, you know, we need to realize that the company that we keep, you know, we need to examine are the people that we hang around with. I don't know how many people have gotten into trouble because they were with the wrong people. Somebody in a car somewhere, somebody go kill somebody, rob somebody. You got in trouble because you was in the car. You was with the wrong person. Watch your friends. Watch your company. Watch who you hang around with. David said, I'm going to be holy in community. I'm going to watch who I hang out with. I'm going to watch who I associate with because I realize that they have a great influence on my life. Holiness is what I long for. Holiness is what you want from me. Take my heart and form it. Take my mind, transform it. Take my will and conform it to yours, O Lord.
Thank you for joining us today on Anchored in Jesus. Tune in next time for the first half of The Gift of Pastor Teacher from Psalm 139. If you would like to request an audio copy of today's message, Resolutions to a Holy Life, you can contact us at anchoredinjesus.org and request Resolutions to a Holy Life. That's anchoredinjesus.org and request Resolutions to a Holy Life. or call us at 877-831-5060. When you visit our website, anchoredinjesus.org, you can view many of the other teachings by Dr. Galaise. Dr. Galaise is the author of 8 books. For more information about these resources and how to order, visit anchoredinjesus.org or call 877-831-5060. We also invite you to like us on Facebook at Anchored in Jesus Ministries. If you would like to make a financial contribution, please visit our website, anchoredinjesus.org, or send it to Anchored in Jesus at P.O. Box 24034, Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania, 15206. Once again, that website is anchoredinjesus.org, or you can send your financial contribution to Anchored in Jesus at P.O. Box 24034, Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania, 15206. It's through your prayers and gifts that we remain on the air. Our title, Anchored in Jesus, comes from Hebrews chapter 6, verse 19, which lets us know that Jesus is our high priest and an anchor for the soul. Now, for Dr. Galaise and our volunteer staff, I'm your host, Sonia Hall, reminding you, you don't have to be tossed in the storms of life. Your soul can be anchored in the Lord.